Oh, that's another interview altogether, and probably one I should not talk about in public. So.
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
That's right, it is Entrepreneur Showdown time. I am your host, Dan Franks, coming on shortly, your other host, Joe Cassandra. Today in round one, Joe and I discuss why storytelling might just be the key to unlock a better branding strategy for you. Then in round two, we talk about the idea of belief and why you should believe that you're going to succeed before doing anything else. And then in the main event, we bring on somebody who will hammer home the idea of belief, and he has the success to prove it. Yaro Starik, a true online legend, joins us in the main event. Now, before we get started, do us a huge favor. Head on over to iTunes, rate us, review us, subscribe to the podcast. It helps the algorithm, which helps us get more listeners, which helps you get the best content possible. And for the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more, head on over to www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And now, let's get on with the showdown.
Round one.
Right now, what Joe and I want to talk about is something that's a little, I don't know, fairy tale-ish, if you will, but not really. And it's storytelling to build your brand. And this can be a personal brand, this can be your large business brand, it can be anything. But the whole idea behind storytelling to build your brand is something that your customer can relate to. Whether it's the story of yourself and that they are at some point going to potentially see themselves turning into something that you have. Or if it's a bigger brand and just seeing that, you know, where you came from maybe shares the same values as where they come from, so they can relate to your brand. And I think before we get too deep into storytelling, the most important thing that we need to say is this isn't imaginary storytelling. This, whatever the story that you or your brand tells, it needs to be something true. Now, the technique behind that is to pick out the parts of your story that are going to be most appealing to your customers and maybe, you know, pick and choose what you leave out that might either not be applicable or might not help your brand as much. So that being said, Joe, what's your thought on storytelling to build a brand?
Well, I'm not an expert in this area, so that'll be hard for me to give too much of, I guess, like expertise on it. So I think this will be more of just like a discussion, like what our thoughts on it. I know for just personal experiences with just social interactions in general, the people who can tell stories really well are usually the people that a lot of people like to hang around with, because they usually have funny stories or they're very interesting stories. And Ramit Sethi talks a lot about having a story toolbox, which is you have like a lot of stories that you can pull out whenever in different situations when you're meeting someone new, just to like kind of get them interested in you. And that's great for interviews or anything like that. So on a business side, like I said, since I don't have a lot of experience with it, it's kind of tricky, because it's some of the examples that we look at in the article that we look at that we'll link up in the show notes. They talk about how companies, they know how to personalize certain branding methods to make you more interested in that brand. And for example, Jonah, who wrote the article, talks about Dove, who creates a lot of these great commercials about personalization, especially towards women. And there's a great commercial that he links to that we'll link up in the show notes that shows you kind of like this branding type thing. But a lot of it is, for the company, it seems like if you're able to craft some story where you're able to, even if you're just a million-billion-dollar company, but you're able to make that brand about an individual and shape it around them, those are the ones that are the most successful. How you do that, since I'm not an expert in that, I'm not too sure.
Well, and I think that a little bit goes back to what I mentioned earlier, which even if you're a large company, the whole idea is to tell some kind of story that will get people to relate to you. I mean, that's that's at the very root of it, that's the most basic concept, right? It's to do something that people can interpret whatever your story is supposed to be, whatever story you're telling, they can interpret the meaning of it. But then after that, they can relate to it at some level, whether it's, like I said, whether it's that's where I want to be at some point, or whether it's, yeah, I can relate to that because that's just like me. At some level, your target audience needs to be related to. So I think before you even craft whatever your story for your brand is, you need to figure out who you're targeting. And that's, you know, any branding strategy, that's what it calls for. But I think in storytelling, more than anything else, because you can't just really throw a blanket story out there and hope to appeal to everyone like you can with other forms of marketing. You really do have to pinpoint who you're trying to target. And using the Dove example that you just gave, obviously Dove in that ad campaign where they're relating, you know, all instead of having a bunch of supermodels in their commercials, they have a bunch of normal women, and obviously they're trying to appeal to normal women. So Joe, I don't think you went out and bought your favorite fragrant soap from Dove after watching that commercial, but hey, your wife might have, right?
I bought it for my wife, how about that?
There you go, and she says, hey, this is the soap from that commercial that has people just like me.
Well, no one talks like that, but I guess in like a your subconscious may say something like that.
Exactly. No one talks out loud like that, but yeah, it's appealing to the subconscious. And I think we should also relate this to some of the people that might be listening to us, some of these solopreneurs or people like you or I who are branding ourselves and maybe are trying to use storytelling to do that. And I think the very basic model of the story is kind of to tell about your past, your present, and your future, right? So if you and I come on here at, you know, a year from now and we're much more successful than we are now, and we say, hey, we started as two dudes sitting in a cubicle working the 9-to-5, and that was okay, but we took the next step and we went for it, you know, whatever it is, you tell that story. And if people can relate to either your past as being where they are or where they also were, and then your present to where maybe they want to be, and then they can, obviously you and I now, we're talking about our future right now in this particular example. So if your audience can relate to any one or all three of those situations, I think that's at the very root, that's where your story starts.
Well, that was a good example what you gave about people relating to the past of someone trying to get to the future. I guess the hard part is if someone is starting up something right now, how do they kind of build that story type, I don't know, narrative? And a lot of podcasts that you hear nowadays, I guess they have like a name for the people who listen to them, because people like to belong in a group, and especially with like political slogans, they all have these political slogans, like that's their branding message. And in this article, Jonah mentions like Obama's "Yes We Can" speech, or "Yes We Can" slogan. And what it was, and we're not getting in any political arguments, but what it was kind of like a rallying cry that people got attracted to, because first it had that rallying cry type feeling, but then it also had kind of a collective group, hey, we want to work together to get wherever Obama's vision is. But it has that collective feeling together, and you'll see that, like I mentioned, with other podcasts, like they have a name for the people who listen to them because they want to build that collective community, that collective group that will then go and tell their stories. So like when we build up a bigger audience, people will start telling our story, and then that's automatically building up our personal brand and building up our extension out into the world to build our audience even further.
Yeah, and I'm glad you picked up on that whole Obama campaign thing, because she makes kind of a counter argument to that, or I shouldn't say a counter argument, but maybe she talks about that Obama type campaign, which is the rallying cry, which is, hey, we're all in this together. You know, whatever your brand is, you relate yourself to being on the same level as whoever you're trying to appeal to, and you say, hey, let's do this, you and I, side by side. And she says that's the new way of storytelling, whereas the old way is more, the way she put it, the consumer is the damsel in distress, and the brand is the one that's going to come and save them, be that knight in shining armor. And I think you could probably see that if you watched older campaign ads. I bet you would see more scare tactics saying, hey, if you don't vote for us, this is what's going to happen, but voting for us and we're going to come in and make things right, right? And that's still the same final message that campaigns try to use now is that we're going to make things right. But as with Obama, and I know a lot of people would say that his campaign was probably the best ever in terms of rallying people around it. That's the whole, they're polar opposites in the techniques. One's the story of trying to save the people, and the other one's the story of, hey, we are the people, let's do this together.
That's true. A lot more nowadays in marketing is creating that kind of positive type spin instead of the more negative type spin. So the people who are listening, if they're going to take anything away from that, try and build something with a positive spin toward it. If you're trying to build that, if you're trying to start that narrative, make it a positive narrative, not as much a negative type narrative.
There you go. And we're going to end this storytelling talk here. That's the end, happily ever after, for this fairy tale. But I think talking over this, and you and I, Joe, we mentioned we're not the experts in this, but I think maybe the storytelling concept is so important for businesses and branding that we might bring an expert on at some point later down the road to go deeper in this with us. But that's going to do it for round one. Let's get on to round two.
Round two.
Today in round two, Joe and I are going to be looking at a article from Yarrow Stark, one of the true legends of the blogging space. And he's been around for a long time, and he's experienced a lot, and he blogs a lot about kind of failures as much as successes almost. He's very open with what he's done, not only that's been successful, but also that's been a failure. And so he's got had quite a bit of experience, not only in tactical application of things that he's been working on, but also in this mindset field. And the article that we're looking at today is a mindset type article, and it's all about belief, just belief in general, but also how it applies to entrepreneurs and businesses, and believing that whatever it is that you're working on, whether it's a new startup or whether it's something else in your business journey, believing that it'll work. And it's a little bit like the Think and Grow Rich or the Secret type thing. But he has a different take on it, and we're actually bringing Yarrow on in the main event today to dig a little deeper into that and a couple other things. But Joe, what did you think of this article and how he interprets some of this belief type thing?
Well, I was actually a little confused. Like, it sounds like he's saying, if you read some of the comments as well on the bottom, it sounds like he's saying, like, law of attraction and such doesn't work, but then he's saying that you just have to have a strong belief in something. I'm kind of confused just like reading this. I'm not really sure like where he's trying to go with this. If it is like some Think and Grow Rich thing, or if he's trying to say that the Think and Grow Rich is what isn't right. I'm honestly confused.
Well, it'll be interesting to talk to him about his techniques, because like I said, he has had success and failure, so he's experienced over the past 10 years or so, he's probably done a little bit of everything, so it'll be interesting to see what he thinks works and what doesn't work, because I see what you're saying. This article, it kind of walks the line back and forth, sitting on the fence, whatever you want to say, about if this actually works or if it doesn't or how to apply it. And he had some most people in his comment section of this article were very supportive of his ideas, and I think they were more just commenting on positive attitude in general and believing you can do something. But he did have a couple people that were very adamant, like, you know, this mumbo jumbo hippie crap about trying to you know, just picture something working and then all of a sudden it working. You know, those people always come out when this type of article comes up.
Well, especially because it's theory, it's not necessarily tactical stuff. If it's something tactical that has worked for Yarrow, then most people aren't going to disagree with it. But whenever you go back to, especially something like this, when you go back to your mindset type thing, there's always going to be people that are going to call it garbage. But I guess for me, if I was going to make any sense of this, he's saying you can't just think about, okay, I'm going to get $1 million or something like that. You actually have to, I guess it's not thinking about it, it's actually believing, like, I guess maybe even some sort of religious aspect to it, like that strong of belief that it's going to happen. And the one point he mentions, which is a good point, is, and he uses the definition, is that it's believing when the physical, circumstances aren't a reality at the moment. And that's why it's a belief thing, not as much, I guess, just keep thinking about it and hope it materializes. That's why, like you said, it's kind of a toe the line type thing. And it's hard. It'll be hard to debate it because I'm still trying to understand what the article is about.
Well, he does talk about this idea that he calls inevitability thinking. And he says this is his, I guess, his concept or his way to find what this manufacturer, more like it, to manufacture this true belief within yourself. He lists out a couple of the different techniques that I guess are more prevalent that he's tried. But this one that he's tried and found success with is this inevitability thinking. And the two steps are to follow a proven system and then setting up conditions to guarantee you can execute that system. And he says it's very much more focused on process as opposed to these emotions or anything like that. So it'll be interesting to kind of let him dig deeper into this process that he focuses on, because he didn't go so deep into that in this article. But that kind of seems like with this article, it kind of gets cut off. You don't know where it's going from there. So that action step isn't really included. So it'll be good to bring him on to then get the follow-up to this article and get that action step.
Well, and some people made a point in the comments that he kind of leads, I guess he leaves that kind of cliffhanger because he's trying to promote his new program or book. I'm not sure which one it is, but I think he's kind of promoting that. So I guess it's kind of, that's the point. It's kind of maybe a sly marketing ploy, I guess, because leaving you wanting more and to know more about what he wants to talk about. So yeah, we'll have to dig in more. And yeah, it is somewhat of a process thing. It's not as much think about it, but more think about the process that you need to create. So yeah, we'll just have to ask him about that.
Well, based on our confusion, he left us wanting more. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get on to the Yaro Starik in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
Today, our guest on the main event is a true veteran of the internet business game, Yaro Starik. Yaro is a blogger's blogger, playing his craft over nearly a decade on a multitude of different platforms and websites. He's worked as a webmaster, e-commerce store owner, proofreader, tutor, info product creator, software developer, and yes, a blogger. All, by the way, while working for himself. He currently blogs at entrepreneurs-journey.com and hosts the Entrepreneurs Journey podcast. In round two, Joe and I discussed a recent blog post by Yaro discussing the idea of belief and what role that plays in reaching your goals. And that's what we brought Yaro on to talk about today. You have your Madonnas, your Bonos, your Oprahs, and now our first guest who go by one name and one name only, and that's Yaro. What's going on, Yaro?
Best intro ever, Dan. Thank you.
Well, I mean, for someone that's known by only one name, I mean, we've got to do something special, yeah. Right?
Oh, you know, that's what I'd say to people at the end of my interviews. Just remember Yaro, Y-A-R-O, because I have this terrible domain name with a word, entrepreneur, that no one can spell, and a hyphen
well,
in
so
it.
Well, so do we, so.
Yeah. So
we're almost as bad, but we skipped the hyphen.
Yeah, and you know, I registered my domain like 13 years ago now. No, not quite that long ago, actually. Maybe like 9 years ago. And you know, it was meant to be a hobby site, so I wasn't expecting it to do what it did. Hence, I prefer to tell people Yaro, Y-A-R-O, and it's a weird name, so people usually remember it. And yeah, I say Madonna or Oprah. Exactly, you nailed it. So thank you, Dan. You well, did it for me.
but so here's the next step. So you know, Prince took it from Prince to just a symbol. So yeah. Now you're gonna have to work with some designers to come up with a symbol to switch to that.
You know, I haven't quite crossed over to that pop star level yet. That's definitely you know, a special place to go when you start getting yourself symbols and, you know, wearing your underwear on the wrong side of your pants and stuff like that. So I'm not doing that
well,
yet.
Well, I noticed you had some, you're one of the few people we've had on that has, I guess, publicity photos on your website for people to use in various places. But I did notice that there weren't any with the underwear on the outside of your clothes. So that might be the next photo shoot you got scheduled.
Yeah, you see, if you look hard enough, you can actually find, I'm not going to say underwear for shots, but you can find long hair shots. And I'm trying to get rid of those. Hence, I'm pushing the short hair ones out there. But you know, that Google Images search, you can't get rid of them. There's some horrendous photos there. And you know, I don't know about you guys, but whenever you're dating, girls will look you up.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, my long hair photos with the bad t-shirts, they don't make a good first impression, you know? So it's hard when you've been online for this long.
Well, we may have to find one of those and put them as your image. So
No,
we won't do that to you. Yeah, Joe's the mean one if you haven't figured out by now.
Good cop, bad cop, I guess.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Yaro, since we do like to usually dive right into the topic we're discussing, we like to ask our guests, what one podcast were they a guest on that they think tells their story the best that we can send our listeners to?
Well, Jesus, so many. You know, I've actually got a recording of a talk I did at The Hive, which I make available on my How I Started page, which is probably the best. Like, it's video as well. Like, it's a podcast and a video. And that was an hour-long talk on, yeah, my journey and how I did everything you mentioned at the start, from proofreading to e-commerce to blogging, everything from back at the year 2000 up to currently. So I don't want to plug my own site too much, but that's you know, that's probably one of the best. And you know, you can Google Yarrow story, excuse me, or Yarrow background, and you'll get, like, I've been doing interviews since 2006. So as I said before our call, I have told my story too many times, and you know, looking forward to talking about something else. So.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely link that video/audio recording to the show notes. Now, Yarrow, what was it that made you blog about this particular topic at this particular time? What was going on with your business or in your life that made you blog about this idea of belief and learning to believe in yourself?
Well, you know, I've been a mindset believer, mindset student for many, many years. And I really do think it's the most important part of a business, being an entrepreneur, being a human being, really, is getting your mindset straight. And, you know, I have a mindset guide that I released around the time when I wrote that article. So I was actually doing a lot of reflection, a lot of writing, recording audios about things related to mindset and productivity. And I've always had this, I don't know what you call it, it's like a sticking point, I guess, when it comes to mindset and personal development and all that, where if you go out there and study some of the things, like, you know, if you ever come across the law of attraction or anyone who's into that sort of maybe positive affirmations or visualization or even just something as simple as having a positive outlook on what you're trying to do, you'll get this advice, and you can make it spiritual, you can make it very concrete, but whatever the case is, people tell you to go into what you're about to do if it's a major goal and be congruent with not just how you think about what you're doing, but how you feel about what you're doing. And I don't know about you, but whenever I've tried to start something new, especially if I've failed many times before, I don't usually feel very good about it. It's, you know, it's something that you failed at. You had that negative experience maybe several times, and you're apprehensive and afraid of potentially that happening again. Hence, it's hard to sort of necessarily get excited, especially if it's something that you've tried, you know, many times. And I'm sure people listening, if they're trying to make money on the internet, you generally fail a few times before you succeed. So maybe the first time you're young, naive, and excited about what you're doing, then you don't make money, or maybe you don't make a lot of money. Then you try again with something else, and it doesn't work either. Then, you know, you might go from pay-per-click to search engine optimization to blogging to podcasting to creating information products to selling services, and, you know, nothing's working. It's hard to keep getting excited and get motivated. So I really like to look at this concept of belief and really breaking that down to be not just positive thinking, not just positive affirmations, but aligning what you're doing in terms of actions, how you're thinking about those actions, and how you're feeling about the whole process. And that's really quite challenging. Like, I'm a bit of an emotional roller coaster guy. You know, I can get one bad email with a refund, it's ruined my day. I make a nice sale and make some money, I've just had the best day ever, you know, and you got to try and be careful because that is a roller coaster. So to answer your question, I've been, you know, looking at that area for many, many years, but more recently just because I was focusing on that mindset guide that I, you know, recently published.
Well, we were talking about in round two, admittingly, we were actually, we weren't really sure. Are you talking that someone shouldn't, I guess, like, have you ever read Think and Grow Rich? Have you read that book?
Yes, I have.
So I guess, like, to bring it, since we've read that book, are you saying that visualization is the first step, or it's just not good at all?
Well, you know, I'm a fan of visualization in the sense that it forces your brain to think about something you want in a positive manner. So that's good. But I don't like the way people tend to use it as, I guess, a way to trick themselves into hoping, I guess. This is funny. There's so many words here that you got to be careful when you describe this. Hope, belief, you know, positivity, positive thinking, because all these things are good. Like, I'm not going to say they're bad, but what I don't want people to do is, especially because of that movement with The Secret, you know, that was a huge movement And that came from Think and Grow Rich. I believe if you dig back, one of the speakers was saying that the idea was sort of originally sparked from that book, and all the people were talking around the same subject area. So The Secret presented that idea of you need to become congruent, think about what you want, doors will open, you have to act on those doors, but you also have to emotionally be congruent. Now, a lot of the press eventually turned that from what I thought was actually originally a very good introduction to the law of attraction, which I think is valuable, to more of a wishy-washy, you think about what you want and eventually it just magically appears like checks in the mail. Now, it's easy to watch The Secret and interpret it that way, but it's also very clear if you do watch The Secret, it talks about more than just thinking about what you want. It's being very congruent with your words, your deeds, and your actions. So all of those things need to align. It's not just thinking. So I've, with the positive thinking aspect, like what you talked about before, I think it's helpful, but it's only just a small piece of the puzzle. Like if that's all you're doing, then it's not enough. And what I liked about some of the concepts I have been sort of studying myself and I wrote about in my guide and, you know, what that article we're talking about here sort of mentioned was that you need to be able to sort of reset your emotional and, well, everything, the way you think about something, the way you feel about something, and sort of clean the slate when you start something new without trying to take too much of the negative baggage you might have built up. Now, for some people, they can do that simply because they're just positive people in general. I don't know about you guys. Are you guys naturally positive or negative in your sort of general outlook? Have you looked at that with your own personalities?
I feel like I'm naturally negative. Now, I fight like tooth and nail to, put the negative side of me down and try to accentuate my positivity. But I definitely think naturally I'm more of a negative thinker, and that's something I battle with quite a bit.
I think for me, I used to, growing up, since I didn't have, a lot of responsibility, I was always very positive. But once I started getting responsibility, I started thinking more negative. But I try and train myself that when I think of, negative responses or anything like that, I always try and catch myself first. And sometimes the negative thing will come out, and then I'll always follow it up with a positive thing to kind of, get my mind, my subconscious into a more positive mindset type thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's a process of self-development right there. I'm the same. I agree with you guys. I have a default negative outlook, and I was quite surprised to sort of do that self-assessment when I was in my early 20s and go, yeah, wow, I really default to some very negative, this is bad, this will always be bad, it's my fault that it's bad, and that's how life is. Versus these wonderful positive people out there would have something bad happen to them and be like, well, that wasn't my fault. It's not always going to be like this. That's just one example. Look at all these other good examples. And that's how they saw the world. And, they were usually happier and getting better results. And then I, started to study positivity training and realized that, wow, there's so much to this. It really is the key to having a good life, is doing what you just said, Joe, being able to, if you are a default negative person, start training yourself to, A, spot the fact that you're doing the negative interpretations, and then flip it to a positive reframe of the way you want to see the world as a positive place. I mean, sure, you can keep being negative if you want to, but I find that usually leads to negative feelings and negative results. So why not switch it to positive, right? So, what I find really amazing about it, it's just a frame. Like, you just have to decide to see the world differently, because it is entirely up to you in terms of your interpretation. Like that's it. That's what I love about it. It's your power, your control. I'm a bit of a control freak with certain things. So knowing that, the ultimate control you have is the perception of what's going on around you and how you interpret it. So being able to change that to something beneficial, I think, is really, really important. So whether, going back to the original thread, if positive thinking, I think it's an aspect of that, but this is a sort of a lifelong thing. I think you don't naturally or instantly switch over from a negative to positive. You have to keep doing it. You have to, I don't know about you, Joe, but I found I would do the same. I think negatively, and then I'd switch it to positive. What I would find, though, is the time period between that switch becomes shorter and shorter. Like, sometimes I would think a whole train of negativity for an hour. Like, this girl didn't, said no to a date, or I set up a website and I've got five people going to it, and this Darren Rouse guy has 1,000 already going to his blog. What's going on here? You know, and my writing's just as good as his. You know, there's so many things like that. You can just kind of spiral into negativity, but you have to go, no, stepping stones, no, there's other girls in the world. You know, all these sorts of things like that to change it. But yeah, it's open to interpretation.
Well, I realize that when I'm more stressed about something, or when I'm always worried about whatever, money, relationships, that's when my mind is always going to always, I guess, default to negative. Then when more, if I'm in like a good mood, or my wife and I were having a great time, like we just came back from our late honeymoon, like during that whole time, like you're in such a great mood that nothing negative is really penetrating you because everything's going well for you at the time.
Yeah, that's the easy time, right?
Exactly.
So, Yaro, one of the things you discussed, and this somewhat relates to what you were just talking about as far as, you know, I guess sticking to something, is this inevitability thinking. And you talk about how you need to find a proven system to follow and then execute that system and really focus on the process of executing that system. And that's kind of to manufacture what your belief should be. Can you expand on this inevitability thinking a little bit?
Yeah, sure. It's another one of those ones where it's a bit conceptual, a bit it's, you know, it's how you think stuff. So it's always difficult. But if you, the way I like to put it, you only can think about one thing at a time, which is good. Otherwise, you're probably insane. So when it comes to, say, starting a blog and you want to try and make money from it, you've got systems to follow. That's for sure. Now it's a well and truly established field. I'm one of many people who teach a way of making money from blogging. So you can pick someone like me or Pat Flynn or Darren Rouse or whatever, John Chow, Chris Garrett, grab a book, grab a course, and you've got a system that another person has developed over time, has had other people use, and earned a result. So it's, you know, nothing's ever going to be 100% perfect, but it is about as close as you can get to a blueprint to do something if you've not done it before. And you're going to add your own mix to it. You're going to have your own experiences, but there is a system you can follow. It's use WordPress, write certain types of content, do certain types of marketing, and so on. So the inevitability part of this is, first of all, placing your belief in the system is important. Well, it's vital. You have to be confident that if you continue to execute what the system tells you to do, and I actually believe this is not necessarily the right path, but I do believe that a system that works, if you work on it forever, it will work, guaranteed. It's one of those things, you know, you can start a blog and do everything right, but maybe you're in the wrong niche, and do it all over again, but do it in a different niche, and maybe that was just the wrong timing. And then start the third blog, do everything again, this time you've got the right niche and the right timing, and it works. So it's one of these things, if you do have that continuous improvement process, everything that's a system will eventually get a result. Whether you want to spend that much time is another question, but you have to believe that it will work. Now, the good thing about inevitability thinking is then you place your faith in the system delivering a result and take away the responsibility somewhat from you. It's almost like that negative positive way of looking. Instead of thinking I'm a failure, I'll always fail no matter what I do, you go, well, here's a system that has worked. I'm going to be positive about the system working for me as well. I am capable of doing this. And then the other part of inevitability thinking, so that's the first thing, is the belief and having a system to follow. Just as important is setting up the variables to allow you to execute the system and you know, being confident that those things are in place. This is really important because there's no point starting a system, but if you are trying to do all the technical work yourself and you're just going against your natural weaknesses, in this case, if you're not a tech person, then you haven't set up yourself for success. So you need to look at the system and go, what parts am I going to be good at? What parts am I not going to be good at? And then fill the gaps where you're not good at with other people, other resources, so that you basically are just, you know, as they say, lining up the ducks in a row, so that you're giving yourself the best chance of executing a system that's proven to work. And your entire mindset is about thinking about only those two things, setting it up so the variables are controlled in your favor, and then execution on a day-by-day, step-by-step basis. And all your thinking is around the inevitability of that process working. You take away any negative thoughts, you take away any aspects of your own history that might be slowing you down, that baggage. It really is baggage. And that's something you can apply to anything in life, I think. You know, whether it's trying to lose weight, you know, get a boyfriend, get a girlfriend, start a business, anything you're trying to do, there's systems to follow. There's better ways to think about it. And you can stack the deck in your favor if you understand what variables you need to control. It's going to take time. It's going to take work. But I think it's a great system.
Now, Yaro, Joe and I have led you down a little bit of an extra conceptual path with this interview, so I want to lighten it up a little bit and switch,
sure,
at least for a moment, to something more applicable. And this is something that you've blogged about some and discussed on your website, and you hinted at it a little bit earlier, but how's that look? How's that search for a date going?
Well, you want to go there, do you? Oh, that's another interview altogether, Dan, seriously. And probably one I should not talk about in public, so...
All right, and since we want this content to be evergreen, I guess we wouldn't want any information like that might you know, fluctuate at any time. So we'll,
yeah, that's then an area that changes probably more frequently than any other part of my life, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you put it.
So. Well, then let me ask you this. You've gone through a couple pivots that were specifically designed to give you more time. You talked about specifically in your social life, but maybe just more time away from work. Have you found that those pivots in the past to be successful? Have you kind of gone back to more work, or have you been able to maintain those that social time you created for yourself?
When you said pivot there for a second, Dan, I thought you said you pivoted from one girl to another or something like that. That's where you were going with that.
No, we'll leave that to you.
I was like, whoa, okay. Yeah. This is different. Yes, you're quite right. You must have been following my blog for a long time, because I did back in, I started my blog in sort of 2005 and then launched my course in 2007, had a couple of great years after that with some courses, and then returned from traveling around the world in sort of 2008. So, you know, 2009, 2010, I did make this conscious decision that I've made enough money. I'm going to keep doing what I do, but I'm not going to do what most people do, which is let's do something bigger and something more, because everyone kind of gets on this more and more and more treadmill. And I'm got no problems with that, but I wanted to develop the more in the areas where I felt that I needed to work on. So yeah, I did go somewhat more social and had a great couple of years, sort of 2010, 2011. And then I started my software company, Cranky Ads, with some partners, and had, I guess, a pivot, like you said, a complete pivot in my business model. My focus went to the software, had some experiences with that, had some family stuff happen as well, which distracted me. And then, long story short, to sort of bring it up to maybe the last 12 months, the software company's been kind of taken off my plate as a main project. It's still running, but we're looking at pivots and potentially selling it as well. And I kind of come back to what I've always realized, or maybe not executed as well as I could have, but I'm a writer and I like to teach. So I decided, especially because the software experience taught me that I'm not a startup entrepreneur. I'm much more a lifestyle entrepreneur. And wow, there's a big difference between those two. You don't really realize it until you try them both. But, you know, a startup entrepreneur, your typical Silicon Valley guy, it was actually quite funny. I was reading an interview with Tim Ferriss just recently. He had in Business Week or something like that, and he was asked, he invests as a advisor a lot of big companies, your Twitters and your Ubers and Foursquares and so on. And then the interviewer asked him, well, you're investing and offering this advice to so many of these companies, why aren't you, you know, doing your own startup? And he said, oh, it's a young man's game. And, you know, Tim's 36 years old. So he said, yeah, once you're out of your 20s, it's pretty much too hard for to be the CEO type person of a startup. It's too much work. And I totally agree with that. I guess I could still fall really passionate about a startup and potentially do it, but right now it's not something I want to do. I'd rather be sitting in cafes and working on my laptop writing, where as a startup entrepreneur, you are expected to put 12-hour days in, just constantly working, especially if you take on investors. You know, the responsibility there is huge. So you need to be making sure that you're always looking to hire new people, market your business, develop new features, coordinate all the people working with you, you know, putting your brand out there with press. And that is a more than a normal job. That's a 12-hour day, and that's 7 days a week sort of thing. And I never signed up for that kind of entrepreneurialism. I was always this 80-20, you know, use your time smartly to get leveraged results and create that free time so that you can spend your time being social or exercising or just sitting on the couch watching a DVD if that's what you feel like doing that day. It's really the flexibility. Work when you want to and don't when you don't. So to really bring it up to today, I have a bunch of products that I want to get out there. I've kind of gone back to following through on what I never really completed back in my peak period of sort of 2008-09 when I had all my training products available. I never really expanded my sales funnel and had a really solid business model there. So I want to do that, get all the products I know that are in me out, get a really good bunch of content available to people through email, and then do some actual testing and buying traffic and I guess going big now, but in the area that I've always enjoyed the most, which is ultimately just my writing and teaching.
Well, I know Dan wanted to veer off into your dating life, but I am going to be the responsible one and go back to what we were talking about before. But, okay, say for someone that's starting off, say they are, let's just use your software example, if they are starting that off, is when you say find, I guess, a proven system, are you just looking for exactly what other people have done, or like what would be like your first steps if someone that is starting right now and they have an idea or they have a product that they're about to, I don't know, maybe even pitch to investors, where are they finding this proven system and how do you know which one to pick?
It's a tough choice. It's not something you can, you know, decide on the surface of it, because copywriting is going to convince you something is amazing, and that's not necessarily the case, especially if you're new to this world. What I think people should do is do a little inward research first to try and assess their own strengths and weaknesses. Like, it's not talked about often enough as entrepreneurs. It's ridiculous, especially because I guess online is so little barriers to entry that really people say, just get online, build something and fail fast so you can learn. And I totally think that's a great idea. Failing fast and executing quickly is great. But I think it's important while you do that or before you do that, you look at what you personally bring to the table. Like, that's what I learned from running a software service. Like, I wasn't building the product, so I was kind of useless. Like, I'm good when I'm writing, creating content, and creating educational materials. But with the software, I had all these ideas, and I was telling the developers that, you know, we need this feature, and this feature. And we just couldn't do it. We didn't have the resource capabilities. I don't think any software company ever can actually build the features they really, really want to. They're always sort of scaling back, and no matter how many programmers you develop, you've always got some restraints there. So, you know, I learned that I'm not going to be great in that kind of role. Writing is my strength. Communicating is my strength. And I can try and leverage that for as much as I can in this area that I've got a lot of history in. So any individual coming to entrepreneurship will naturally assess themselves first and go, okay, am I good technically? Am I good writing? Am I good speaking? Maybe I'm better at just coordinating people. Maybe I'm good at hiring other good people. Maybe I'm a good ideas generator, but I'm a terrible follow-through person. So doing some sort of strengths and weaknesses analysis personally, and then applying that to actual subject areas, I think is the next really important step, really maybe before you find the system, is, you know, do I want to dive into the thing I've been developing my life around? Like, I'm a tennis coach for my entire life. Is that where I should go with an online business? And, you know, often it makes sense to do so because you're bringing an advantage with you, the years of experience as a tennis coach. And that can be translated into whatever product you create just from what you've already got. There's no need to do more research to learn more things in the area of your specialty. So, you know, I don't know about you guys. If you were to start a brand new business and look inside you, is there a particular area that you would go to beyond what you're doing already?
I mean, I definitely have different interests, and I know I'm not like a tech coder or anything like that. I like producing content, especially, I guess, like podcast content, not as much written word content. But I mean, that's one of the areas I'm kind of like caught up in. Do I pursue something that I enjoy, I guess, doing, or I enjoy, I don't know, watching or anything like that, that may be already saturated? Or do I need to go after more the, okay, find a need, even if it's like, I don't know, how to make your bathroom smell better. I don't know, something like that. is, and we've had this argument before, like, which direction do you go and which one would you more likely stick with or which one would you more likely succeed with? That's always a question we're always arguing.
That's a great question. Sorry, you go ahead, Dan, first.
Well, no, and I was going to expound on what Joe said. That really is that's something that we talk about almost with every guest, because almost every guest we have has a different thought process on it, and that's the whole, you know, should I go after passion or after utility?
Yeah.
And so, I'm kind of like Joe as far as not quite sure, so I'm going to, I guess, plead the fifth on that answer like you did about the date answer. But yeah, I'd definitely be interested in hearing your thought process when it goes into the whole passion versus utility idea.
You know, this is why it's so important to do that personal strengths and weaknesses analysis, because I actually think looking at a passion versus looking at utility or skill or a need in the market is tied back to what you bring to the table. Like, for me, I'm never going to enjoy the keyword research process. I'm never going to enjoy setting up niches about subjects that might have a demand in the marketplace and I might be able to make money from, but I don't want to do it. That's today, though. You go back to Yarrow 12 years ago when he was a 21-year-old guy, not making any money. He was prepared to put in the work in different areas that he didn't necessarily care about, didn't have passion about. It was all about meeting immediate needs of my own and then tying that to needs of customers that I was looking for. So, you know, my first two businesses are actually good examples of both different models. I don't know if you call my first one a business, but I was making money with my Magic the Gathering electronic commerce store and trading forum and content website with advertising. And that was brought about by my initial interest in the game as a teenager and then eventually as a tournament player and trading cards. You know, I enjoyed all that for a few years of my life. And that was a passion-based subject. So I didn't do keyword research. I already had access to a market because I knew the audience in Australia. I was part of all the bulletin boards and news groups that people talked about it. So it just natural for me to flow into that business. The next business, though, was proofreading. And I had no interest in being a proofreader. All I did was saw a need in the market. I was a big fan of eBay, and I wanted to have a business model that was like that, where I was a middleman bringing people together. So that was very much a situation where I want something bigger than my card game website. I'm over that. I want to make more money. I want to have a better lifestyle. So I'm doing this for that reason. And then that worked. And then I sold it eventually, and you know, eventually got into blogging. And blogging was kind of like a mix of the two. It was great. I got to, first of all, explore a passion with the subject of entrepreneurship, but also use a business model that could make a lot more money than I'd made with my previous ones, and also leverage the experience I'd built up 6 or 7 years of running a card game site and a proofreading business and a few other things along the line. So it's really, I think, important to assess your strengths and weaknesses, but also assess your personal situation in life, because a 20-year-old is going to do something different to a 30-year-old versus a 40-year-old. You know, we've got more experiences, we've got more skills built up at certain phases of our life, we've got more free time, we've got more or less dependencies on our lives. So that all comes into this decision-making process of whether do I just go find any niche that people want to spend money on? Like, you know, Pat Flynn has been talking about this with his niche site Duels, and he's gone and I think his current one is food vending machines.
Yeah.
And that for me is a boring as subject. I could not build a site.
You must not have enough food trucks to eat at in Australia then.
Actually, we don't. We have barely any. I think there might be a law against them, but regardless, I just don't care about that subject, but it's perfect for Pat's audience because they're there to make the money. Got to make the money and they're probably more utility-based people. They enjoy the process of setting up the system. They enjoy the keyword research. They enjoy setting up a website. They enjoy checking the traffic coming in. They don't care about writing because of the love for food trucks. Pat might. Pat's good at finding love in special places. But you know, most of his audience will be building these niche sites that they aren't necessarily really, really passionate about. And they might turn into big sites. But I think at the end of the day, nothing will last really, really long term and become significantly large unless there's a healthy dose of passion in some part of the process, whether it's the subject, whether it's the process of the keyword research. There is a passion involved there. Pat's passion is being exposed to this audience and helping a lot of people. So he can pick all these different niches. You know, I would really like to teach people who are already passionate about, like for good example is Joe Gilder, who I recently interviewed for one of my products. He's been a musician all his life and initially paid his bills working for a home studio recording store, so you know, selling products that help people record music at home, setting up home studios. And that was part of his passion. He loves music, he loves creating music, he loves recording music, he loves helping other people doing that. And then he started teaching because he just had so much knowledge. So he just started putting into a blog, putting into a newsletter. He didn't do keyword research. He knew what people wanted because he was already interested in the subject. He had these needs himself. And then built his little newsletter up, sold his first product and made $3,000, and then has gone on to make 13 more, and now is making a couple hundred thousand a year selling all these training products and membership sites around this niche of music. And there's no way he would have done that if it was a subject like, you know, something he didn't care about as much as he cares about music. So there's definitely lots of aspects. And I think we've gone so far off the original question here about finding a system. But assuming you start to learn this stuff about yourself and you assess your situation and you know, you know at least where you're coming from, I think finding a system is actually a case of just testing little pieces of the puzzle. Like, there's so much free stuff. So if you came across me, I would download my Blog Profits Blueprint and just start looking at that and what I'm teaching there, going, do I see myself doing this? And if I'd say no, I would stop. And then I'd go to maybe, like recently I saw, who was it, Glenn Alsop from ViperChill, who, you know, he's an SEO guy, but he decided to do a bit of pay-per-click advertising. And he joined a forum where it was a paid forum. I think there was like a monthly membership. And people in there, they're traditional affiliate marketers with paid advertising. So they'll go buy Facebook ads, promote a product from Commission Junction. They'll work the numbers so that for every dollar they spend on advertising, they get $1.10 back. And then once that numbers work, they put in as much money into that system as they can. And, you know, they can go from zero to 30,000 a month within a month if you follow this sort of process. But it might be hit and miss too. You know, you're going to have to learn about buying traffic. You're going to have to learn about finding, you know, the refinement of the audience. Which of the advertising systems do you get good at? AdWords or Facebook ads or buying content media or banner ads, so on and so forth. So I would keep refining your research process till you start realizing that you're enjoying these things and not enjoying these parts, and you see yourself following through with something and maybe not following through with something else, because that's really what's going to lead to getting a result. Picking a system that you see yourself actually still doing in 12 months' time, that's a really important question.
Well, to go back to what you said like way back a long time ago, you said that a lot of people should, I guess, fail fast and then learn from there. But doesn't that kind of go against the positive thinking that everything's going to work out and be okay?
You're inevitably thinking, yeah. In some ways, you could say that. It's one of these things where I think everyone, again, you know, coming from different places, you might have a really blank slate. And it's hard to really have true inevitability thinking until you build up some experiences around parts of the process. You know, that's what I meant by controlling the variables. You won't even know what you don't know without doing a little bit of failing fast. So yes, you can try and set up the variables as best you can, but let's face it, if you've never even had a website before, you're really not going to be entirely confident in setting up WordPress for the first time and, you know, doing that. So if you go and set up WordPress for the first time, that part of the variable you'll be more confident about, be more in control. So you kind of build the pieces of the puzzle, I find, with inevitability thinking. And the good thing about it is you can kind of reach a point, I don't know about you guys, but I certainly feel like I'm there now, where although my specialty is blogging, I do feel so comfortable with the internet in general that I could jump into Facebook advertising right now, pick someone, maybe Amy Porterfield, I'd buy her course, I'd go through it, and I'd feel pretty confident that I'd know what I'm doing because I get the internet. You know, I get Facebook. I know how traffic flows work. I know how conversion flows work. So I can control the variables in different areas of internet marketing, even if I have no experience there, because of the broad experience I've had, which includes a whole lot of failing early on and a whole lot of research. So the important part with the failing fast is to build that groundwork of knowledge so that you do feel you can control those variables and build that inevitability thinking sort of structure around what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think Joe and I have quite a bit, maybe me more than Joe, experience in failing fast. But I think we actually have, similar to what you said, been able to parlay those experiences into this podcast. So even though this is our first podcast, you know, like you said, some of those experiences all combined really can translate to something completely different, or something that's seemingly completely different, but then you can turn it into, you know, something good.
Well, yeah. How did you guys even know how to do a podcast?
Well,
did you follow a system, or
no? We, you know, we taught ourselves. But Joe and I both had experience with WordPress, and both had experience with WordPress plugins, you know, to get the feed set up and all of that. So all the technical aspects that went in behind the podcast, we had various levels of experience between the two of us. So we were able to create something that had a good finished product, even though it's our first, you know, go at it.
Yeah. So you probably had some fairly good inevitability thinking kind of thoughts around a podcast. You might be a little bit not sure about how many people are going to download your episode and how popular it's going to become and where it's going to lead you. But setting it up, delivering an MP3, interviewing people, you felt pretty confident you could execute that system, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and now you're doing it, right? So
it's working.
Yeah.
So, Yara, before we let you go, I've got to say, we've had a number of Aussies on the podcast and already.
That's so American, Dan. Wow.
Well, see, it's funny because this is where I'm going. Like, we've had James Shramko on and Jake Hauer, and both of them have super heavy accents. But yeah. You, your Australian accent is pretty weak. Are you an undercover American? That's what I got to ask you.
You haven't done your research then, Dan. No, I'm I'm kind of a weird bag. I was born in Brisbane, Australia, and grew up here, and, you know, spent my entire life here. But my parents have Canadian accents. They weren't actually born in Canada either. They're both immigrants, but they did learn English in Canada and then migrated to Australia and had me a year later. So I grew up listening to Canadian parents talking, and, you know, I was a shy kid and didn't do a whole lot of talking myself. And by 7 years old, the Canadian kind of stuck with me. So there's definitely some Aussie in me as well. Like, I'll have some phrases come out and go, whoa, that was really Australian. But I think, well, everyone hears differently, but so far people tell me I sound Canadian more than Australian.
Well, that aboot does it, eh?
Yeah,
with
no,
this podcast.
Toronto Canadian. There's no aboot about it.
Oh, you know what? We're here in the United States, it's all one cold country to the north as far as we're concerned.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. No. The place with the safer place without the guns, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's where we go for safe harbor. Yeah. So, Yaro, before we wrap up, why don't you let everyone know what you're currently working on? I know you mentioned a number of few new projects that you have going on, and then where everyone can go to learn more about you.
Yeah, I'm in a bit of a mad dash of... Actually, I'm doing a lot. There's a lot of training products coming out. I've got e-guides on how to get traffic to your blog, obviously mindset and productivity. I've also got one on buying and selling websites and blogs, which is something I did for a number of years, making some good money. Plus, good old-fashioned how to make money with blogging. So I've got all that. But like you said at the beginning, Dan, we're going for the Madonna and the Oprah here. So I just tell people to remember my name and how to spell it, Y-A-R-O. And if they Google that, they'll find my blog and my podcast and my YouTube channel. And very soon, my app and all those things will be out there. And it's all around that very easy to remember name, I hope, I think. So that's the best way to get on my newsletter. That would be the one thing I'd tell people to do. Go get to my blog and then join my newsletter, because I'm telling, you know, the day-to-day story through that newsletter. And, I, you know, it's a good resource as well.
Very good. Yaro Starek, or if you're searching in Google, just Yaro. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Dan. Lovely to talk about some interesting stuff.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Now, to find out more about this show and to see the show notes, check out entrepreneurshowdown.com. Leave us some feedback in the comment section and let us know what you think. And if you like what you've heard, do us a huge favor and head to the iTunes store and leave us a 5-star review. So with that, for my partner Joe Cassandra, I'm Dan Franks. We'll see you next week.